All right, we are here. And welcome, welcome. Our pleasure to speak with you on the topic of money. Money. How do you feel when you hear that word? Do you shake down into your boots? Ooh, money. Gotta have it? Money. Or, oh, that again. Money has so many meanings, so many approaches. People have so many different ways of relating to money. Your culture makes it rather important. Money seems to be stuff that everybody's got to have lots of, or you don't have a really good life. Well, you see, your culture runs on scarcity. It's called supply and demand. Now, that seems so fair and seems so just. Supply and demand, balance in the marketplace. Well, maybe it was when you lived in a little village and everything that you needed, you either grew, or you made, or you bartered and trade for. You see. But at some point in the development of human culture, the trading, the bartering, began to extend beyond your little isolated village. People could travel from village to village. Things came from other villages. And even though you had this kind of connection and bartering connection, it got to a point where it became a bit complex. And so some kind of form of reference, some kind of abstraction was required to ascertain a point of value. For example, if you took your goat to market, right? I want to get some vegetables and I want a pair of shoes. All right, well, you just can't pull your goat in and say, okay, I want some vegetables from here, and I'm going to go some here to another person for vegetables, and then I'm going to go over here to the cobbler for my shoes. You just don't go around and chop the goat into three parts. So what you do is that you go to the butcher, the meat guy, who buys the goat, and he gives you coin, or he gives you some kind of paper, something, coin. Coin was the first thing that came. Something that people thought was important, had some value in and of itself. Because you see, at that time, people couldn't conceive of the abstraction per se. You see, if you had food, that was something of substance. If you had a horse, that was something of substance. A house, all those kinds of things. They were things that you actually used. That was something that was kind of real for you. An idea of a floating concept of value that could change, that had no real intrinsic value of itself, had to be created. So initially it was something like gold and silver and metals. That were, they looked like they were valuable. It took a bit to put them together. They were rare. So somebody could control them. And so what you do is you get your goat to the butcher and he'd give you coin. And he'd give you a few coins. And this coin equals, you know, a quarter of a goat. And here's another quarter of a goat and another quarter of a goat, another quarter goat. So you get like four coins. And then you go to the vegetable person and you give them this. Okay, quarter of a goat's worth of vegetables, or maybe two coins, half a goat for some shoes. So rather than having to go to the butcher and have the butcher negotiate with the others for you, you created this system of transferring value onto something that was not the actual object itself. Now, the reason we're mentioning this is because this was a great advance as far as the ability to think and conceptualize on the part of human nature. It was an advance. It was not intended initially to be much more than an expanded sense of bartering. And so what money represented at that time, it represented the balance of exchange. You see, in your life, you give and you receive. That's an exchange of energy. You have a mate. All right, give and exchange of energy. You know, when you work for somebody and they pay you, it's an exchange. That you give them something of value and they give you something of value. Money enabled people to ascertain value that was not the actual thing itself. It was a point of reference. Eventually, people began to realize, well, you know, you can create value on the exchange process itself. So banks, lending and borrowing. Hence everybody's in the difficulty they are now. Because some people then get a lot more control over the flow of money. And you know, if you can control the flow of anything, since everything is in flow and everything is in exchange and movement, my gosh, you can make a fortune. You can get a lot of this abstract value built up, all these points of reference. Human culture pretty soon found it very convenient to assign so much value to it. Playing with it was supply and demand. Things that were rarer, that could become more important, could get a premium. So there became a lot of play, a lot of fluctuation. It became so abstract that it became something of itself. It developed its own thought form, its own reality. Money became, in people's consciousness, substantial. And rather than having a relationship with what you are exchanging money for, you developed a relationship with the money itself. You made the money as real as that which you use the money for, the objects that you purchase. Now, this is a very important point because it meant that people developed a relationship with money. Before that, money was just a point of reference for an exchange. Now, how is your relationship with money? You know, if you have a friend, a good friend, and you have a really strong intimacy, a loving friend, they're your equal. You want to be with them, don't you? You enjoy their company. They enjoy yours. You can just get together and do nothing. It's so much fun just to kind of be together. If you don't have any issues, if you don't have any unresolved situations, there's a sense of freedom. You can be yourself with your good buddy, your good friend. You can do things together. You can talk about anything. You can confide in them. It's a wonderful experience. There's a communion between you and your friend. Now, money operates pretty much similarly. If you enjoy money, if it feels good to be with it, if you don't have all sorts of unresolved issues with it, if you can be yourself with it, open to it, and you love it, and you like it, and you enjoy being with it. Money can enjoy being with you, too. You've made money a consciousness, in a sense. Today, we're going to connect you to the spirit of money. it has a spirit, in a sense, to it. Now, spirit is something that is, in a sense, realer than just your physical plane. It's realer. It's as real as your knowing. Spirit is. But spirit only lasts in the physical. You have a spirit yourself. When you die, your spirit dissolves. The spirit is useful for the function of movement of energy in the physical plane. It does not work on the other planes necessarily. Your spirit doesn't work there. Your soul works there. Your soul goes much further, much broader, much deeper. Spirit is the dynamic of flow that you have. How you move your energy is your spirit, your dynamic of energy. The way you express your temperament, the way you move your life, your spirit is showing. Money has a spirit too. It is a dynamic. It's not attached to a body like you. You attach it, in a sense, to money, the actual bills, the coin, the representations. You attach it to that. You give it form that way. So it seems more real in your physicalness. But the spirit of money is attracted to you. It's attracted to your spirit and the spirit of money can blend, can flow, can be friends, can enjoy a relationship together. Now, there are several ways in which you have been taught to have a relationship with money. And unfortunately, they're very limiting. Consensus reality, the mainstream consciousness that's out there, has put a lot of definitions, a lot of beliefs on it, a lot of reality on it, a lot of issues have been projected from various people down the years onto this whole concept of money. Money has been used to manipulate people. Money has been used to do all sorts of great, wondrous things. It runs the gamut. But you have a society based on scarcity, that there's not enough to go around. There's not enough for everybody to have as much as they want. Now, we want to point out that this is consensus or collective thinking. This is not what's real for you, actually. As a light being, you came into this reality, a reality of an illusion that you created with your team, your higher self, your spirit helpers, everybody working together created this fantastic illusion. Look at it. It's amazing. It's consistent. Phenomenal depth of an illusion. In this illusion you created, actually, you created infinite possibility. You created the possibility of infinite flow. You created the possibility of being really, really good friends with money. So what happened? Well, there are several things. But if you notice in your culture, you notice in society, issues around money are very, very huge. Who has it? Who doesn't? Who has it is more important than who doesn't. Who has it? What is it? You know, with the rules of money. If you have money, you make the rules. Money seems to organize people's activities, organize people's lives. Money. So important. And particularly at this time on the planet, the whole concept of money has been run into the ground. Why? Because the money changers, those people who discovered, hey, I can make a lot of money on the money flow, on the exchange, on the borrowing and lending. My, I can make a little extra on that. And I could just, and anybody who wants to invest and borrow and lend, oh my gosh, every trade, every stock trade, the stockbroker can get a little cut, a little money on moving money. That's why some people's portfolios move a lot. That broker can make a good amount of money on the portfolio. Unfortunately, you got a situation where some people got a little bit out of hand, or a lot out of hand, went irresponsible, just because they could. They wanted to see how much money they could make. And so you have a guy named Madoff who ran a $50 billion Ponzi scheme. How much money can I make? How can I create out of nothing? This money, you understand, is created in a sense initially out of something. In other words, goods. But once it gets into the area of exchange, there is nothing it's based on anymore. It's based on just ideas, possibility. And without any responsibility, he went and just kind of played, let's see how far it goes. Let's see how much I can get. Let's see just what the limits of this are. Somewhere inside himself, he forgot that he was meddling with money. Some of these people who initiated, and unfortunately one of them was your President Bush, initiated the whole what they call subprime mortgage situation. Let's give everybody the dream, the vision of having their own home. Even if they can't afford it, hey, you know, we'll make it possible for them to live the American dream. For them to imagine and think they have money. Because after all, money is pretty ethereal, yes? Think about the national debt. Does anybody have a clue how much that really represents? And now you're going to have an infusion of trillions. You know, you got money has become so abstract. People get all dazed over the zeros, you know? How many zeros do you have? You have 3 for 1,000 and then 3 more for 1 million and 3 more for 1 billion and 3 more for 1 trillion. It's an exponential thing. And when money gets lost in the stock market, it's of no substance. That money's gone. It's not anywhere. Vaporized. Because all it was anyway was numbers on paper somewhere. It's a concept. So recognize that with this circumstance on the planet, there is a downside for you and there is a marvelous upside. The downside for you is that with your identification to the collective, to the consensus reality out there, which does provide you with your money. That's where you get it. It's from your culture. It's from your society. You get money by your interchange and interflow with it. So you can go down with it too. But then there is the positive. The positive is that with this kind of recession going on, with this pit going on, with this dropout of money, with the craziness of money, you have an opportunity to create a new template, a new reality a new relationship with money. Your consensus or mainstream culture has a relationship with money that is distorted, that is twisted, that is manipulative, that is laced with fear. This crazy powerlessness associated with it, or power. There's just all sorts of things associated with it. And yes, you can go down with it, but you could create a new relationship with money. And by your new relationship with money, not only pull yourself out of this dark, chaotic time, out of this confusion, out of this unknown, out of the, quote-unquote, the pit. Because no one knows just how far it goes down. Nobody knows where the bottom is. You can pull yourself out by having a healthy relationship with money. It's not like money's going to cease to exist as a concept, as a spirit. It is still fully functioning. Money goes to those who woo it, who love it, who play with it, who naturally accept it, allow it, who have an easy relationship with it. That's what we want you to have, an easy relationship with money. And you being spiritual people, people on your spiritual path, you're going to have the opportunity to have it in a very responsible and empowered way. You will be able to show energy, exchange, light around money that others need to have revealed. You are going to be the ones who are going to inspire others. You're going to be the ones who are going to step out of the darkness first. And the opportunity here is for you to get out sooner rather than later. That new template, the new paradigm of money, is going to be made. We're going to discuss how to do it today. And we're going to take you through the experience of creating it today. Your opportunity is to take advantage of this. To not wait until the society, the culture has driven you into the ground. But to be able to step out of that. Because it's going, there is a flow. The flow is continuing. The flow is going. There's not a point where the flow is going to stop. The flow right now is going down. But you can turn it around. But you gotta have a good, healthy relationship with money. Are you ready? All right. Okay. Well, let's look at what your relationship has been, all right? Your culture has taught you several ways of the ways that your relationship has been, and we have some interesting lists that we and the channel put together. We're going to share with you. The first place, of course, that you learned about money and learned about the relationship with money is from your family as a child. Now, think about this. When you were a child, you were powerless. You had no interest in money whatsoever. You were involved with things that were real and tangible to you at the moment. Now, did your parents, did your family give you lots of things? Did you have lots of toys, lots of goodies, anything that you wanted? Oh, yeah, we'll get it to you. Or did they, in a sense, say, I'm sorry, we cannot afford that right now. You'll have to wait. Maybe you'll get it for the holidays. Maybe later. Now, you see, a child, now this is when you were a child too, a child doesn't understand scarcity. The concept of scarcity is a shock to the child. The concept that there's not enough to go around doesn't make sense to a kid. Because a kid has come in and still is plugged in on some levels, not being totally socialized, totally trained in the culture, to believe that there's infinite supply. After all, to them, this reality is all brand new and interesting and fascinating. There's so many, many, many things to learn and explore and discover, and it's just fantastic. If a child wants something, it wants something right there. Now, do children have a delayed gratification response? No. Children don't know about that because they're still close to having been on the other side before the physical plane, when all you wanted is that you just, oh, I want that, and boom, it's there. You go to the astral plane, you say, I want this, boom, it's there for you in the astral plane, causal plane, super causal plane. It's there. Any desire fulfilled immediately. So the child doesn't understand. So when the parents say, sorry, we can't afford it, or no, we're not going to give this to you and not even say we can't afford it, sometimes the parents are a little bit embarrassed about that. Not today. Or they say it's not in our budget. Do children understand budget? Of course not. So what's a child going to construe? What's a child going to believe when a parent says, no, you can't do that. You can't have that. No. Child's going to believe, well, there's obviously nothing wrong with the universe. There's infinite supply. Everything, and the parents are taking care of me, and everything's flowing the way it's supposed to. So why aren't I getting what I want? There must be something wrong with me. I must be the problem. Because it looks to me like they have plenty of everything. You know, we have plenty of food, the car, we got the house, we got, wherever we're living, it's, we got beds and everything. We got everything we need, got everything. TV, gosh, everything. So why don't I get it? Why is it being denied me? Did I do something wrong? Did I do something bad? And sometimes you'll notice that parents will even manipulate a child with money or toys or things. Now, if you'll be a good girl or good boy, then we'll give you that. Oh, okay. So if I don't get anything right now, I must not be a good girl or boy. All right, so what's a child's relationship with money? It's powerless. It's not deserving of it. It is waiting for money to decide whether you're good or bad. What is it? Santa Claus. You know the whole thing about Santa Claus? If you've been bad, you're not going to get any presents. Does this stop children from being brats? Of course not. They live in the present. They can't think about, oh, I've got to be good so I get presents. They're going to get them anyway. It's just a threat. But it also makes a child feel very insecure. So a child feels like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not going to have enough. And I'm powerless. I can't go out there and get everything like the adults do. Oh gosh, I'm helpless. I'm helpless with money. And what if your parents gave you money? Oh, here's some dollars and so on. What did you spend it on? Nothing of value, right? Well, and go down to the local store and buy cheap candy Or sometimes, you know, since children don't really understand money, they don't care about money, really, it's just another thing. Give it to somebody. Or on the playground, the bully gets the money, gets the lunch money at school, or they begin to see that money is very important and it gets them goodies. Do children ever have enough of it? No. All right. If you feel this way about money, what's your relationship with it? I never get enough of you. I never get enough of you. Needy, 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 right? So anytime you feel that emotion inside yourself, anytime you feel that state of needy, 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 guess what? Your inner child is saying, look, you're having a money issue. Here's how I responded. So here's my advice to you. Cry. Whine. Maybe you can beg and plead. Get scared. Go helpless, hopeless. Look for somebody who has money to give some to you. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Panic, panic, panic. The child in you. Now, what's interesting is that even though physically you're grown up, you've done a lot of own evaluation. You're on a spiritual path, so you've done a lot of self-awareness work. When you get to a place of confusion, when you get to a place of indecision, fear, where you have hesitations, doubts, don't know where to go next, don't know what decisions to make, if it has anything to do with money, your child self could very easily come in and say, well, I have an option. The child is still with you. It's still alive within you. And you use your child as your consultant. What did I do when I was a child? Well, let's see. That's what happens. The child is your consultant. Not a good relationship with money, is it? Not a good friendship. A sense of being deprived. A sense of greed. A sense of neediness. Greediness comes from childhood. A sense of unworthiness comes from childhood. Beliefs, it's not there for me. Here's some beliefs from childhood that show up and with adults. Beliefs, we have scrimped and saved for everything we have. All that scarcity stuff. I don't deserve. I don't deserve to make any more money than I have right now. I don't deserve to have any more money than survival. See, children are very concerned about their survival. If they don't have enough, they won't make it. So anytime you get into the survival line, there's a bottom line there. You're playing in the child zone. I feel guilty if I have more money than others. See, sometimes you have siblings and the parents have to distribute. All right? A lot of times the parents will try to distribute equally to the siblings. Now, if you were an older sibling, you'd say, well, that's not fair. I have more needs than my younger one, than my younger sib. And they're valuing the younger one as much as they value me. I've worked more. I've done more. I've tried harder to please. So it's always feels unequal. You see, when that happens too, then you feel that if one sib gets money, that means it's less for the other one. That's why we're saying that particular brief comes in. What, you know, how many of you had your parents say, well, just think of all the starving children in Africa. Finish the food on your plate. oh, if I have something, it means they don't have anything. There's a sense of anger about it. That means I have to eat peas? Canned peas? Because the children in Africa are starving? Ugh. All right, so you see how children think about it. It's like, okay, I've got something, and if I don't appreciate it, there's something wrong with me. So if I have something, somebody else doesn't have something. So I better appreciate what I've got. And if I don't appreciate what I got or what I've been given, then something's wrong with me. I feel guilty. I feel guilty for having something when other people don't. I feel guilty for making more money than other people. I feel guilty having money and then I drive through a poor neighborhood because they don't have money. There's two angers here. One is on the source of the money coming to you, and the other one is at those people who don't have anything because of them, I have to feel guilty. Because of them, I have to appreciate some crap that's in my life. There's a lot of people don't really want to feel grateful. They're angry. They don't want to feel grateful. Child. So if I'm rich, someone else will have to be poor. There's only so much to go around. I'll never amount to anything. I'll never be successful. I'll never get what I want. I'm never sure if I'm doing things the right way. I'm not smart enough to be wealthy. This is sometimes what the younger sib will ingest. Not at that time. You don't think about being wealthy when you're a child, but when you grow up, this is the way it translates. I don't deserve to be happy or successful and have lots of money. So anytime you feel that, you're on survival level, you're on child. You may think that you've done something wrong. You may try to fix it. You may try to please. So that's child. Your self-image. You learn about yourself. How important and valuable are you? And you might have been made important and valuable and loved and supported and everything by parents who would give you everything but money, but money things, but things that money buys. They will support you to learn your instrument and to play your music, do your art, you know, be with friends. They'll tell you how smart you are, how you can do anything you want. But then they don't have the money to give you all these things. So there's a dichotomy there. So some of you can be extremely successful as long as it doesn't involve money. Child. You can be successful in every other way. You can have the best friends. You can have the best circumstances. You can have wonderful things around you. But money, gosh, that eludes me. Why can't I befriend money? That's part of the child energy. Now, of course, once you got into adolescence, you had a peer group. And then you saw money as manipulation. Instead of money being this kind of parental being who's going to dole it out depending on how nice you are, how good you are, how valuable you are. Suddenly, money becomes, in adolescence, becomes the lover. Becomes something to seek, something to woo, something to run after. Some status for you. And in adolescence, the teenagers that have money can flaunt it. Or they can feel guilty about it, depending on their childhood, of course. But you, the adult, can still get your adolescent in there with lots of doubts, insecurities, hesitations, fear of being shamed and humiliated, being labeled a loser, being judged, criticized, excluded from your group, excluded from the in-group that you want so badly to be part of when you're a teenager. This energy can continue with you. And you're looking for someone that you can manipulate. And so that's the time where you really try to bend your parents' arms to get things. Well, everybody else has it. Let's put some peer pressure on them. Right? Then they wheedle, whine, bitch and moan, manipulate to get money. Once again, they're not very powerful. And they don't have much responsibility about money. So those who do have money, like bad off, adolescents, just don't know the boundaries of it. It's this unfathomable energy. Just don't know how to connect with it. It is this elusive, hard to get friend, hard to get person. What do I have to do? What hoops do I have to dance to? How perfect do I have to be? How important do I have to show myself to be? That's when ego comes into play. I am so important. I'm so important. I'm so important. Here, can't money and value accrue to me now? The pretense, the drama. If you have drama about money, is it coming? Is it not coming? Is it coming? Is it not coming? And who do I have to manipulate? And who do I have to, you know, bend their arm? You know, it's always somewhere out there and it's going to validate me. So if you're looking to money to validate you, to tell you if you're important and valuable and worthy, to give the final word on that, you're an adolescent. Now, of course, once you leave adolescence, you get into the world. You leave your education, whatever it is that you have to do. You start having a job or you get married or whatever it is. As an adolescent, you had a lot of fantasies about, okay, what's going to happen? Am I going to make millions of dollars? I'm going to be so successful if I just puff myself up enough, or maybe I'll just marry somebody. An option normally given to girls. I'll marry somebody. You know, a girl does want to go out with a rich guy. A guy who can spend a lot of money on her. Ooh, I feel valuable. So can you imagine what happens when you get into your 20s and it's time for you to go and explore the world? The young adult. Right. All right, so we didn't finish with adolescence. Here we go. I'll never have enough money. Why bother doing so much work? I'll fail anyway. If I make more money from my friends, they'll be jealous and they'll stop liking me and hitting me up for money. How do they have money when they're no better than I am? Jealousy. Just thinking about money makes me sick to the stomach. If I talk about what I want, something's going to go wrong. And I'm not disciplined enough to be wealthy. Those are adolescent things. We want to get those in. All right, now, young adult. Now, these fantasies that you had as an adolescent get applied to the world. You had these ideas, okay, this is what the world's going to be like. And you know, when you enter your 20s, you think you know everything. You think you have a good opinion about everything. You could fix the world. Hey, if you could just step into the presidency of the United States yourself, you could just fix it. You could get everything done right. Yeah, because, hey, you're seeing the craziness and the stupidities of everybody. Hey, I'm going to fix it. I just know what's right. And then you get in there and realize you don't know much of anything. It's quite a shock. But you can't let anyone know, right? So as you get into young adult, you look for, in your fantasy, If you're a spiritual person, you look for a some kind of benefactor. You still don't think you can make the money. You have to work for somebody at first. You can't really just start your own business and be instantly wealthy. You have to go out there and work in the world. The young adult has a lot of fear about it. Fear of humiliation, fear of failure. But really loves the creative process, really loves the thinking process, really has the big dreams. But so afraid of failure that you don't want to follow through on all the doing. All the doing is plodding. All the doing is so boring. When am I going to get to the money? You know, if I want to be a multimillionaire by the time I'm 30, I'm awfully going very slow. What gives? I've got to make more money. So you get into thinking about big deals, right? And you get, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to do that big thing and this big thing and that big thing and the other big thing. And you go so far beyond your capacity to create that type of income in your mind that there's a gap. This gap happens more in the 20s than anywhere. Now, generally the gap can narrow in the 30s. You'll bring the fantasies and dreams down and your capacities will come up. And hopefully, at some point, it'll click in the 30s and you'll get your path, your financial path going. Some people earlier, some people later. But that's kind of the plan. Some people don't tend to get there very easily. Some people are there temporarily, but then they go back to the big dreams. So if you're a young adult is consulting with you, your young adult is going to be looking out. Well, where's the big money? I don't want to just, you know, I don't have the time to waste anymore. I got to get my millions. I got to get my money. Where's the big money? Now, we want to point out, as spiritual beings, the more you've worked with yourself, the less likely it is you really are into money for the money's sake, right? You're hoping to have some a good life and have good money and all that kind of stuff. But money itself is really not that interesting to you. As a spiritual person, it's necessary, gotta have it, but you're not as interested in it. So when you are in young adulthood and your young adult comes and talks to you, they try to convince you that money is really, really, really important and you need to want money. You need to focus on money. Right? It's in the 20s that you get into the workplace. And so, many things that you get there into the workplace that the young adult has to deal with. All sorts of new energies, new limitations, new definitions of money that you get from your peers in the workplace, from your boss. See, now, if you're an employee, you have a boss who is a parent substitute. You get to play parent-child dynamic with them. All right? But then here are generally the beliefs that people in society have about success. And even though many of them are incorrect, these have become the basic foundation of many money-making philosophies. In other words, the more money I want, the harder I have to work. Or the longer hours I've got to put in. Or the smarter I have to be. Time is money. If I want to make a lot of money, I must have an immense knowledge. I must really be on top of my game. I must be better at whatever I do than everybody else. I must have a certain set of skills. And if I don't have fill in the blank, I'll never be really rich and successful. What is your condition? What is it that you've got to have? That's what the young adult will use on you as a consultant. It will basically tell you, you don't have that. You don't have enough of that. So therefore, you can't be successful. You haven't written your great American novel yet. How can you expect to be a successful writer? You haven't done this yet. Until you do this or that or get this or get that. You can't make a lot of money. You can't draw money to you. What's your relationship with money in that regard? Money's got the purse strings and is looking at you like, have you earned it? Have you really worked hard enough for it? Have you suffered enough for it? Have you paid enough penance for it? Money's hard to come by. You can't have both time and money. There isn't enough. You have to be tough to make money. Then there's the fears. The higher you go, the harder you fall, yes? You have to be born with money to be wealthy. So some of you say, okay, that must explain it. I just didn't get money from the get-go. You got to have money to make money, yes? If you don't already have money, no hope for you. That's the rationale of the young adult. In order to be really wealthy, you have to work all the time, sacrifice your health, your family, your leisure, your personal time has to go. Long hours, overtime. Got to make this business work. Harder, harder. And here's where you really get the extended adolescent aspect of it. You got to lie, cheat, and steal. Now, you personally may not feel this is necessary at all, but that's because you, dear ones, are on a spiritual path. And that's not right to your nature. But how many people do you see doing that who seem to be making a lot of money? What about the big money men? You see, think about all those subprime mortgages where you didn't even have to state your income. You know, you could just say, oh, or you could say, oh, so much and so much, and nobody'd check. You know, so people would overstate their income so they could get a loan so that they could live beyond their means. Well, that's, you know, from a earning point of view, that is definitely a trouble waiting to happen. Wealthy people are selfish and don't care about others. How many people got that attitude validated when they heard about Madoff and all the big money guys? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're greedy pigs out there. You know, they just will manipulate and scam people and no scruples. So you can get into very judgmental places about the business world. This can come from your disappointment, your disillusionment. And so when your young adult confers with you, it'll basically tell you these things. It will judge the business world. It will judge things. Like, I'm on your side. You see, it's all a pile of crap anyway. So if you can't make money, it's because you're better than that. See? Because in order to really make money, you just have to scam people and you have to have this kind of circumstance. And since it's just not working for you, then see, you can be holier than thou. So a lot of people don't trust anybody. And the people that are the poor suckers are the people who have to do stuff they hate to do to make money. For some of you, this is where slavery began. All right? Slavery to money. Money cracking the whip like your employer. How many of you have been employed and had a boss that was really hard to get along with? It's a classic scenario, yes? What does a boss do? Manipulates, pushes and drives, criticizes and judges. You never do good enough. They don't ever see anything your way. They don't hear you. They don't let you participate. You're powerless. They want, just want to look good to their superiors, and you've, and so they're going to push you to make them look good, et cetera, et cetera. Now, your friendship with your boss, if it exists, is going to be as distorted as your relationship with money. Because you're going to judge your boss naturally. You know, he or she is so manipulative, so mean. How could they do that? Manipulative, dominating, controlling. Money starts to control your life. Now, another place, well, see, making a lot of money is immoral, right? Big profits are obscene. How many of you talk about obscene profits? No judgment there, yes? Obscene. They're like, what's wrong with profit? The obscene means is that because the person is making so much more than other people, they must be a horrible person. Now, do you want to be a jerk like that? Do you want to be rich so that other people will look at you and judge you? Do you want to be visible with money? Do you want to be exceptional and stand out because you've got more money flow and easier money than others? So you can get into thinking that the material world, the marketplace, is godless, ego-ridden, just a horrible place. Now, if you're spiritual, if you probably had an influence of religion in your life somewhere, even if you originally were agnostic and really didn't have, your parents didn't have much to do with religion, most of you got it one way or another, indirectly, if not directly. Now, what religion did was emphasize this type of judgment. You know, if you make lots and lots of money, you're probably manipulating and scamming a lot of people. And because the guy who runs, who owns the factory is making more than 15 times the workers, there's something wrong. He's not being a good person. He's being manipulative and over greedy. Now, this is only the judgments made by people who are jealous, who like to judge and think themselves more spiritual, more holy. Why? Because in religion, and we're saying even the Jewish religion, creates a separation of sorts between spirituality and money. A lot of people have said, the channel has quite a few Jewish friends, and they say, well, they'll make comments like, I don't understand why I don't have more money. I'm Jewish. Because in certain sense, you're supposed to make a lot of money. It's part of the tribal, the tribal drive, survival. Tribes are survival. You've got to make money. It's important. It's not only imperative for yourself, it's imperative for your tribe. A lot of weight on that, yes? But the problem with it is that even so, people who make too much money, quote unquote, are not good people. They're resented. People are jealous of them. There's judgments made on them. Lots of judgments. There's a television show that every now and then, when the channel's flipping around on TV, on flipping channels, comes on to, and the whole show is about criticizing celebrities. It gets several guys and gals with cameras and go out there and stalk celebrities. And when the celebrities go, oh no, not again, do they have a bunch of critical words for these poor people? Not one detail is left uncriticized. So how many people want to make a lot of money and become visible? And if you're spiritual, it's even worse. You know, there's a quote by Elizabeth Taylor. My morals return when I wake up in the morning. That was the theme of Hollywood, you know. At night, the stars play. And they're all immoral characters on drugs and, you know, rejecting their mates and having affairs and all sorts of crazy stuff going on. They're jerks. So how many people want to be there? The spiritual people, unfortunately, got twisted by religion to judge that as being unspiritual. And in a sense, shut themselves out of that very level of wealth. So if you went through a phase in which you were like very spiritual and you were looking down on the marketplace and down on material reality and materialism, a desire of any sort, oh, you're not supposed to have desire for anything. If any of you went through those phases, you created so much separation between spirituality and materiality. It's like the separation between mind and heart. All the concept of philosophy and religion and the miserable physical body. The guilt-ridden physical body. Now that's something religion knows how to do really, really well. Guilt. Right? If you're prone to guilt, you'll be guilty about money too. So there's these different ways that maybe your holy moly spiritual self, if you went through those phases, will come to you when you're under spiritual crises. And you will find that somehow or another, the more you look within, the more you try to fix it from your own, fix me, I'll spiritualize me, I'll make me more, I'll work on it, I'll do processes, I'll meditate. The more elusive it still seems to be. Now, basically, when you're in your 20s, the temptation, if you were spiritual then, if you saw yourself as being in the spiritual path, and we know many people who did this, is that they spent a lot of times meditating. They'd meditate on this and they'd meditate on that, and then they would wonder why the manifestation wasn't happening of the money. Things weren't coming to them. They were meditating for things to come to them. They were meditating for good people with money to come into their lives. They were meditating. But you see, in spirituality, the imprint of religion, the distortion, is that you are a child of God. That makes God your parent. It puts you back into powerlessness. It puts you back into a relation of waiting for God to dole stuff out if you're good. And even though you go into the New Age and you go into personal development and personal growth and you say, oh yes, but it's spiritual to be wealthy. It's such a conflicting belief that if you have a belief inside yourself that still has not been fully cleared that says it's not spiritual to be wealthy, they're going to cancel each other kind of out. And you wonder why you're not getting somewhere. We're seeing a lot of that at this time. The manifestation, the physical plane manifestation of the money, seems to be hard to get. It seems to be out of arm's reach. And the child self and the adolescent self within you, the young adult within you, the holy moly within you, saying, well, okay. You get with them and say, all right, what shall we do now? And the holy moly says, meditate. You got to program it. You got to visualize. And you can manipulate your reality. Make that reality work for you. Make that money come into you. And your young adult says, well, maybe we'll find a really great deal that will come through. a really great situation. We'll connect with some really, really, really rich people and network with them. And we'll put together something really big and really grand to help the planet. It will make such a difference on the planet. And we'll have some really wealthy people that will, pump it and fund it. And once we have the funding, I'll be rich. And I'll be helping the planet. And then you have the adolescent say, who's whining and complaining and perhaps in some self-pity and angry and judgmental, jealous and judgmental, and saying, well, how did they do it? And we've got to do it like, we got to figure out how to do it. They do it like this. We got to figure out how to do it that way. And the child is saying, we got to survive. We got to survive. If you don't get the money, you're going to have to make some compromises here. You're going to have to do what you have to do to survive. What are the emotions that go with that when you meet with all of these selves for their consultation? Not good, is it? Now, what we've been talking about feels a little heavy, doesn't it? Can you feel the weight that's put on money? The heaviness? Think about money. Money. Feel how society's put a heavy weight on it. Can you feel the heaviness in you energetically? It's heavy. Think of something that's easy and fun and free for you. Something that works really well in your reality. Something really well. Just think about it right now. Something that's just wonderful. Easy, flowing. You're in the flow. What? Feel it. Now, doesn't that feel light? Did you get the difference, dear ones? Can you feel the difference? Money has a lot of significance. It's made so important. It's carrying this weight on it. It's what we call charge. Money has a charge on it, and which makes it very difficult to get, because your relationship with money is that money is so more important than you. That you have to do all sorts of things to get that money to come to you. All sorts of twisting and turning and manipulating and blah, blah, blah. Even if it's manipulating of energies and meditations and blah, blah, blah. You, blah, blah, blah. I got to do all sorts of things. I got to earn it. I got to create it. I got to make it happen. I got to push, drive, do whatever I got to do. Do you do that with your friend? Your good friend? No. Once you have a really good friend, do you work really, 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 really hard to make them like you? No, they already like you. You can relax. Okay. Feel the energy of money. Just feel it. Feel that heaviness, okay? We're just going to take you for just a little brief venture here. Just feel the heaviness of the money. Okay. Now, let's just lighten it up. So what we're going to do is we're just going to lift it for you. Just let it lighten up. Just lift it. And by lightening up, here's what you do, is you just imagine what it'd be like if you and money had a really nice, easy, comfortable relationship. You could say anything you wanted. You could be who you are. Money accepts you totally. You accept money. You're good friends. You hang out. It's natural for money to come your direction. It's natural for money to be with you. You're just naturally capable of creating it, of allowing it in. It's just easy, easy, easy. Oh, money's just such an easy, natural thing. Okay, just imagine. What if that were true? Just feel it. Feel it. There's infinite flow of possibility in this reality. Money's just one piece of the flow. Money has the same intensity, same weight as a beautiful flower. Just feel that. What's a beautiful flower? Doesn't that feel kind of light to you? Ooh, a beautiful flower. Just beautiful. Uplifting. Okay. Put that energy on the money now. easy, uplifting, light. It's just easy, uplifting, light, light. Okay. Money comes to you easily. Just let yourself feel this flow starting, money coming into you. Just feel this easy, light energy now coming into you. Just feels it come into you. Oh, it just feels really good. It's easy. It's comfortable. It's really light. Money coming into you. There we go. Come on. Receive it. Just feel the flow. There's an energy flow. Money's just energy. Just think about it that way. It's just a frequency. It's just energy. Let it come. Just a nice energy, just like a beautiful flower. Do you have a pet animal you love? Just beautiful like your pet animal, right? Just you want to be with your pet? Hey, just feel that same energy. Let it come into you, into you. Somebody that loves you, just let yourself receive that. Just feel flow coming into you. Just get the sense of the flows coming into you. All right. Think of a dollar bill, just a dollar bill. Isn't it easy to get a dollar bill? Think of it, dollar bill. A dollar bill, just imagine it appears in your palm of your hand. Easy, right? No charge, no issue. A dollar. Just $1. $10. Easy. Light. The same easiness and lightness as $1. $100. In your palm. Easy. Light. Just like a $1 bill. $100. $1,000. $1,000. Feel $1,000 in your hand now. What does $1,000 feel like? There's a check made out to you from a bank. $1,000. Just feel it. Easy, easy, light, just like a beautiful flower, the love of your pet. Just $1,000. Oh, just so easy. Okay. All right. $100,000. Easy, come on. Just as light as a beautiful flower. Light, light, light. Easy, easy, easy. $100 just coming to you. Easy, natural. Just natural for you to have a check for $100,000 in your palm. Just easy. Just natural, easy. $1,000,000. The zeros grow. $1,000,000. Oh, okay, just as light, come on. Lift the heaviness. Some of you are getting heavy. Come on, let it go. Come on, lift, lift, lift. It's just like a beautiful flower. Just imagine a beautiful rose or a bush in bloom. Just beautiful, beautiful color, beautiful flower. $1,000,000. Same level frequency, come on. Same lightness. Feel it. $1,000,000. A beautiful flower. Or maybe a beautiful tree. A beautiful painting. $1,000,000. Beautiful, beautiful. All right. Nice. Okay. All right. $1,000,000,000. You add 3 more zeros. $1,000,000,000. $1,000,000,000. Come on. Light. Easy. Come on. Just beautiful. Like a tree. A beautiful work of art that you can stand and admire. Just feel the uplift. It's okay. Lift the heaviness. Come on. Come on. Up, up, up. Lift the heaviness. It's just a beautiful flower. It's easy. It's just natural to you. You lift it. It's all illusion anyway, okay? Just lift the heaviness. Let it go. Up, 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 out. $1,000,000,000. All right. It's illusion. It's illusion. Okay, $1,000,000,000,000. You may have several checks there. $1 trillion. More zeros. Come on. See now, it's starting to get light again, isn't it? It's beyond your sense of reality. It's like the U.S. Treasury, way beyond reality. You're in the infinite zone. It makes no more sense. There's no reality to it. It's so beyond. You don't even have weight on it anymore. Just feel that. It's the heaviness and the lightness you put on it from your experiences in the past that you still buy into. The charge you put on it. And you can just lift it like this. What if you did this every day? What if you woke up in the morning and money felt like this? Just naturally, you expected that all day it was going to be plenty of it. And it'll be there wherever you want it. And that you'll have more than enough of it. You'll have more than survival. You'll have plenty. What would that feel like if you just woke up and that was the way it was every morning? And there's more. And there's more. And it was light. You feel light. You feel light. Feel light. All right, now, you've got all this billions of dollars, right? Feel the infinite wealth of this lightness. You have more than you'll ever be able to spend. Okay, now, give it out to the world now. Just send it out. You may want to take an exhale and blow all the money out. Okay, blow out billions. Blow out millions, thousands. Blow it all out. Blow it all out. Blow it all out. Every bit of it until there's absolutely no more left. It's all gone. Zero. Down to zero. Breathe it out. Give it away. Give it to your reality. Give it to your world. How does that feel? Empty. You don't have any money now. What does that feel like? Make a note. If it feels different, you have charge on money. You may have actually some underlying fear from the child. Oh my gosh, I've run out. What's going to happen now? Oh, how will I survive? See, a lot of people have so much charge on money, they get very stingy. They can't give it. Or a lot of people have a spiritual belief, I'm going to just give my money, give my money, give my money, because I'm a good person, I'm going to give it, give it, give it, give it, and then the universe will resupply me. But the beliefs are not there to support that. So just let yourself feel that kind of emptiness, okay? See, it was an illusion to begin with, right? So let yourself feel light, think of that beautiful flower, think of that beautiful sunset, something nice. Something pleasant, beautiful love of a pet. Just think of that. Oh yeah, just feel that. All right. You have infinite supply, dear ones. You can have as much of it as you wish. And it's an exchange. You give it all out. Energy out. Energy in. Energy out. Energy in. You notice how your body's constructed, so you breathe in and you breathe out. You breathe in everything, all the air you need, and you breathe out. You breathe in, you breathe out. You don't stick anywhere. Because if you breathe in and can't breathe out, you got asthma. If you breathe out and you can't breathe in, oh what, you have pleurisy or you have pneumonia or something? Lung disease? So, and your body's made just to flow in, flow out, in, process, release old stuff, out. Do it with money. Do it conceptually at first. Do it emotionally then with money. Feel the freedom. Feel the light. Feel it. Let it be. All right. Okay, now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And during this break, we would suggest that you think about money and you. Think about what relationship you've had with money in the past. Think about what your inner child experienced and what relationship he or she had with money. Think about what your adolescent relationship with money was, what your young adult relationship with money was, what your spiritual self's relationship with money has been. And pay attention to what you do when you're under stress, financial demand, financial need, or financial circumstances where somehow or another you feel yourself in a situation where you feel you need more money. Or you desire more money. Or you feel that you don't quite have enough coming in that you can count on, that you can rely on. What do you do? What does your child, adolescent, young adult, and spiritual self, the holy moly self, have to say? Where do you snag yourself up? What beliefs about yourself? What beliefs about your capacities? What beliefs about others in the business place? Judgments or beliefs do you have? Now, you may have a whole list. You may have virtually none. But just pay attention to the energies when you tune into them. The heaviness, okay? Feel the heaviness. And then feel the lightness when, after you become aware of these, maybe write, jot them down someplace so that you can address them, because we're going to let go of them later. You can breathe it out. Just let it go. And breathe in money and breathe out money. Money is not going to hurt you. Money doesn't have any issue about you. It's all on your side if there is any. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. After the break, we'll have questions. We'll talk to you about things that you have of concern, clarifications you'd like, whatever. Then what we do, we'll have another break, a shorter one. And when we come back, we'll talk about the steps to do, what to do, what the spirit of money is about. And we'll prepare you. And then we'll have a meditation in which you will meet the spirit of money. And you'll create a new paradigm, a new relationship with money. And you'll let go of all these limitations. And you'll get back into the flow. You'll allow the flow to open for you. Because when you feel comfortable in the flow, magic happens. The miracles occur. There's a time of miraculousness is at hand. A time of the chaos. A time of grand opportunity. And you're ready. Yes, you are. You are so ready. And make your choice. Yeah, I'm going to change my relationship with money. I'm going to improve my relationship to money. It's going to be easier. All right, so 20 minutes. 15, all right. 15 minutes. So you can do what you need to do. And we'll be right back with you for the second part of this workshop. All right, farewell for now.